Rishus Marina, Rav Shlita. The question of selling chometz, which I'm dealing with today, is one on the subject of ha'aromo. Ha'aromo can be defined perhaps in a number of ways. The most common way might be a legal loophole, or maybe a device, or a legal fiction. But the question is, which I'm posing today, is that chometz which you're selling really sold with all the sincerity of both the buyer and the seller? And can we explain that it's a valid sale? I once worked in an office surrounded by non-Jewish people, and one Gentile proudly told me how his friend used to be called to his neighbour regularly on Saturdays in order to turn on heating or whatever it is. And there was one girl called Zoe in our office and said, "You can't do that." And he said, "Why not?" She said, "That's cheating." And it sort of made me thinking, oh well, you know, Amir al-Akum, we've got various dinim about it. But when it comes to selling comics, are we in fact cheating? Are we sincerely selling what we have, knowing full well that we're going to get it back? And I remember year after year, the Gabba in North Hendon Hadass would stand up on the last day, Pesach, and would say, people should not use their chometz till 10 p.m. tonight, because the rabbi would not have bought it back till that time. And the feeling of it was, well, it's yours already. So what is the question about intent? And then there is another thing. The person who buys your chometz, it's usually the caretaker of the shul, and without disrespect, I don't believe that the wage he's given is so enormous that he's able to afford all the chometz that he is buying. After all, you might only be able to afford a couple of pints in the pub. And what is he doing? He's buying from the rabbi of the shul as the agent crates of whiskey, maybe a whole warehouse of whiskey, tens of thousands of pounds worth, which he wouldn't even be qualifying for a mortgage for in the bank.
We sell out at a discount of also about 5%, so you can actually arbitrage
it. Even with a 5% discount.
This is the 18th.
Can the guy afford it? And even if he can afford it, is it right that you just leave it in your house in some little cupboard where you paint the skull and bones on the cupboard? Maybe he should take it away. You should give it to him. And you've got to then start organizing removal vans. And he would have to hire a warehouse in order to store it all, because the volume of the chometz that he's buying is colossal. So how genuine is this? Can we rely on it? Well, obviously, if your rabbi does it, it must be okay, and we put our full trust in our rabbinical authorities. But we've still got the right to understand what is going on and what is the reasoning behind it. So if you look at the Tosefta, which you have in front of you, which is from Pesachim, Perek Beis, the source for selling chometz and acquiring it back is in the Tosefta, in Perek Beis, towards the bottom of the right-hand column, the fourth last line, the third last word, Yisrael v'nochri shehoyu boim b'sfino. A Jew and non-Jew were sailing on a ship, and it's Erev Pesach, just before the Zman ha'Isur, v'chometz b'yad Yisrael, and there is chometz in the Jew's ownership, harizem mochron v'nochri. He is allowed to sell it to the non-Jew, the nosna b'matona, or to give it to him as a present. And he can then retract or whatever and go back and acquire it from him after Pesach, provided that it's given to him with a full acquisition. It's got to be complete, without any conditions. According to the Bach, there is additional words in the original text here, and those original words, which are also quoted by the Beis Yosef from the Bahag, Uvad Shelo Yarim, provide that he does not cheat. What does it mean, provide that he does not cheat? So various Mephoshim say it means that there are no conditions. But it doesn't actually say it that way here. You shouldn't say, provided you give it back to me, or provided this, or provided that. There are no conditions. And that gives you a validity for selling comics. So this Tosefta is brought down by the Rambam, Perek Dalet Halachavov, and also in the Shulchan Aruch, Arachaim, Simon Tov Mem Ches, Sif Gimel. The question, however, is that the Tosefta's talking about sailing on a boat, and it just so happens that you are there, and it just so happens that you meet the non-Jew, as if it's an occasional thing. It's not something which you might be doing regularly. And therefore the Chidushei Ramban in Pesachim Dachov talks about Rav Amram Gaon, one of the Gaonim. He says, "V'ein ha-Yisrael rogel la'aseh kei b'shar shonim." Provided that one doesn't do this regularly every single year, then mutter, then it's allowed. And this is brought in the Yotzei HaGaonim, Siman Ches. It's also brought by the Me'iri and the Nebuchei Yosef that the allowance to sell chomet is it just so happens to be a one-off. But if you're doing it regularly, then surely that's a haroma, that's cheating, and therefore it should not be allowed. And so says the Ritva. He says, "I will imher him, but if a person was really cheating or using it as a device, u'rogilasos kein b'chol shonim, and a person uses it, does it every single year, konsin on lay, then we fine him, and he's not allowed to use it, because it's as if it's just like a pikadon. It's really as if you've just deposited it with the non-Jew over Pesach, and you're not really sincere about having a proper sale." Many people will be familiar with the first mishnah of the second perek of Pesachim, Kol Shor. I don't have it in front of us, but it says, Kol Shor Shemuta Lecho. As long as you can eat the chometz, you can feed your animals and so on, and you can sell. There's an argument there between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says, Lo yim karchemso. A person may not sell his chometz, elon ken yodaba shiichle kodem Pesach, unless he knows that the goy will finish eating it before Pesach starts. And Beis Hillel say, no, kol sheh shemutalech mutalimka. As long as you're allowed to eat the chometz, you're allowed to sell the chometz. All right, the Gemara talks about precisely which hour and what you can do in the fifth hour and so on. We won't go into that. But it's mashma from Beis Hillel that as long as you're allowed to eat chometz, you can sell it, which means that you can sell it whenever you want to sell it. And it's not something which is a one-off, but it might be something which is regular. Says the Ramban on there, he says, the reason for Beis Shammai, who says you shouldn't sell the chometz unless you know it's going to be eaten before Pesach, is because he's worried about haroma. He's worried about cheating, that a person will not really be selling sincerely, so that if that chometz still exists when Pesach starts, it's not a genuine sale. Because he might not be doing it belev sholei, aval baderech haroma ba'alma. So says also the Ran and the Chidushei Rabbeinu David. Therefore it can be seen that Beis Hillel is not worried about haroma, he's not worried about cheating, because he says, no, as long as you're allowed to eat, you can sell, and it doesn't matter what happens afterwards, whether the chometz is eaten by the goy or not, you've sold it. It's outside your possession, and that is good enough. Nevertheless, what we've spoken about now is the chometz which you might have in your pocket, or in your briefcase, when you're on the boat, or whatever. We're not really talking about tons or dozens of crates of whiskey, which might be sold in the manner it's done nowadays. And on that I'm going to now talk about the Bechor Shor, one of the well-known Acharonim, and the Tevuos Shor, and he says, I'm very surprised that there are people nowadays who are selling their cattle, they're selling their whole flock, their herd, to a goy before Pesach. Why? Because they've got cows which they want to fatten up for purposes of breeding, and if they don't feed them with chometz on Pesach, then these animals will lose weight, and it will take ages for them after the Pesach to make them gain weight again, and they'll lose lots of money, and they can't feed those animals with chometz on Pesach. I understand that nowadays the farmers don't give them chometz anyway, but that's what was happening. So in order to keep them fat, people were selling their animals to the goyim for Pesach. They were selling the animals and the chometz that the goyim should be feeding their animals, and therefore they can buy the animals back after Pesach, really, really nice and stout and fat, ready for shechita or ready for sale or whatever. And he says, that's not normal. You don't normally do sales like this. It can't be done, surely. This can't be the type of sale envisaged by the Tosefta in what we quoted before. He quotes the Bahag of the Vachalayarim. You may not swindle, you may not cheat. So he quotes a Gemara in Shabbos. A Gemara in Shabbos, which is on Daf Kuf Lama Tes on the base, which you have in front of you. And he says an amazing chiddush from this Gemara. It's a few lines above where the Mishnah starts. So it's about halfway down the page. Quite a bit there he's talking about Haramah, but we won't read the whole lot. Haitzubim Rabbonon, 8 lines above the Mishnah. Haitzubim Rabbonon, Rav Huna Berev Chayon Shmei, Va'omri La Rav Huna Berev Chalvan. Some say it was Rav Huna Berev Chalvan Shmei, it was his name. The Shokal Bora the Sumo. He took on Shabbos the head of a piece of garlic, Umonach Bebarzo the Dano. He put it on the top of the barrel where there was a hole. That is to say that you're not allowed to close up a barrel on Yom Tov. Opening up a barrel, closing a barrel, there are shilas about bonet, but the rabbi says you may not close it up. So what did he do? He took this piece of garlic, because he didn't want the wine to go off inside the barrel. So he took this piece of garlic and he put it on the little hole on the barrel, and he said, I'm just putting away my garlic over here. So the Gemara says, but Omar, and he said, my kavana is simply to put away my piece of garlic. So really, although his intention had been to stop the wine from going off, he was simply saying, I'm putting away my garlic here. But Ozil, and then he went, and he went on a ferry. He sailed on a little boat, which was to take you to the mainland on the other side of the river or the canal. The Avar Lahakiso, and he sailed to the other side. The Sayaperi, but he had left on the ferry before Shabbos lots of boxes of fruit. And he went on this ferry and he said, I'm here just to stand by my fruit to make sure nobody takes it away. And it just so happened that the ferry started sailing to the other side. There's a dindrapon. You don't go sailing on the boat. Don't go riding. So he then was, it appears, transgressing a dindrapon. Did he say, no, what I'm doing here is coming here to look after my fruit. I'm just here to look after them. He said to him, Haroma Kamato. Yeah, but that Haroma you're talking about, this kind of device which you're using, Haroma Drabonon, that is a Haroma Drabonon. Because what you are circumventing is not a din daraisa. So Rashi here says, we're talking about a din daraisa. Ha charoma lab bisura daraisa hu. That's towards the end of the narrow lines. And bisura drabonon, it's different. We'll be more lax and we'll be more lenient. That's not to suggest that we treat the rabbinical laws lightly. But when the rabbis made their laws, they had inbuilt a concept that you might be allowed to use certain loopholes or devices. And therefore, says the Bechor Shor, coming back to our subject, he says that I consider that there is a haroma. But the haroma that you're doing when you sell your chometz is on a din d'rabbanon and not a din d'oraisa. And therefore, it's allowed. What is the din d'rabbanon and not the din d'oraisa? He says like this. He says, you're going to do a bittul chometz. You're going to say, Kol chamira v'chamira d'kibishusi, all chomets which I have in my possession, which I've seen, which I've not seen, which I have removed, which I've not removed, shall be considered as hefka and like dust of the earth. That fulfills your Torah obligation to get rid of chomets. You don't really have to do anything more than that in our Torah. But the rabbis made a rule that you might be leaving around in the house some delicious cream cakes, which you will forget yourself about because they're kosher the whole year round, and you're going to forget yourself on Pesach, and you're going to eat the chometz on Pesach. So the rabbis made an added precaution on Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzei that you have to remove the chometz from your house. It's not good enough just to do a bittul, to do the hefker announcement. So he says, and this is brought down by the Mardonei Shmuel and other well-known sforim about Hilchos Pesach, he says that the whole din of Mechiras Chometz is based upon the fact that you don't want to be over a din d'rabbanon to have Chometz in your house, even though you've done your bittul Chometz, and therefore it's okay. There is a problem with the Bechor Shor, and there are a number of commentaries who ask on this, including the Chasam Sofer, the Mekar Chaim, the Nasivus, and they ask as follows. If the Bechor Shor is saying that you are only fulfilling the din d'rabbanon, surely there is a contradiction somewhere. Because when you have done your bittul chometz, you will normally do it before you sell the chometz, or when the rabbi sells your chometz. So when you do your bittul chometz, that's a bittul on all your chometz. And then afterwards you are saying, I'm now selling my chometz. That's a contradiction. How can you be selling your chometz when you've already been mevatel it? It's not yours anymore to sell. So the problem is that there is a giloy das. You are revealing that your whole bittul, your whole kol chamira, wasn't sincere. I wasn't sincere when I did my bittul because then I'm going and selling some of it. Ah, you can say, well, in that case, don't do the bittul first and then the selling. Do the selling first and then the bittul. Ah, okay, but if you do the selling first and then the bittul, then that will be going against the daraisa and not the drabbanon because you haven't done the bittul yet. So what do you do first? The selling or the bittul? Whichever way you go, you're in a catch-22. This is the question which is posed by the Shavivei Eish, Rav Stern. He asks this question as well. All right, you could say what you sell is not included in the bittul, but then you've also got the problem of then selling midaraisa, not on drabbanon. How do we solve this? So he quotes a sefer Shvilei David, Rav Nachmanzon. Shvilei David writes like this. He says it's a bit like a land purchase, where the kinyan is defined as not being at the time when you're exchanging the money, but there is a delayed action in the kinyan, which is taking place afterwards when the shtar is finalized. And then we say lemafreya, retrospectively, the kinyan took place from the time of the exchange of money. That's the Shvilei David. It's a longish approach. But the Shvilei Eish is not very happy with this answer. He says you can't really compare it. There's still a haroma here on the daraisa. And he doesn't feel that you can compare the circumstances surrounding the purchase of land with the selling of chometz. So what does he do? He quotes instead the Ran. The Ran at the beginning of Pesachim, he says an amazing chiddush. The Ran says at the beginning of Pesachim, he says, well, in actual fact, when Pesach comes in, that chometz, whether you've done anything or not, is asur b'hanah. It's got no value intrinsically. You might try selling it, but l'halacha, it has no value because it's asur b'hanah. So it's as if it's not in your possession anymore. So then why do you have to do anything before Pesach? Why do you have to do a kol chamira? Why do you do a sale? In actual fact, the Torah has taken that chometz away from you in any case. So the chiddush of the Ran is that Torah sort of places back in your reshus that chometz. Also, hakosuv ki'ilu b'reshuso, it puts it back as if it's in your reshus because it says la'yimotzei b'vateicha, and it says tashbisa, you have to get rid of it. So the Torah sort of takes it away from you, but then gives it back to you in order to get rid of, so that you can play an active part. But it's the briska thing. Is it on the gavra or is it on the chefta? Is it you having the duty to get rid of it? Or is it that that chometz should not be there? Right? The truth is that if you don't have any chometz, you don't have to buy chometz in order to get rid of it. So the Minchas Chinuch says, you can sit and do nothing and you've still done the mitzvah of tashbisu. Just do nothing. You've done the mitzvah. You don't actually have to buy it in order to get rid of it. So he says that you don't have to worry so much with chometz. We do have the added precaution given by the Torah to do a bittul. But if you don't do a bittul, the Ran says the chometz is taken away from you in any case. And therefore, the selling isn't such a prominent feature, but we do it because we want to have extra chumras because of the significance of chometz. But on this, that leads us... Yeah.
Honestly, the intention is going to...
But if I don't eat chometz the whole year round and there's no chometz in my house...
No, all right, but the people who do, they want to get rid of it. It mustn't be seen in their house.
Yeah, but I don't even have to do bedikas chometz. Because it says, kovakam shem machnisim el chometz ain't such bedika. You don't even have to do bedika if you never... So if you have no chometz in your house the whole year round, you don't have to do anything. So the whole situation the Ran perceives chometz to be is that the Torah is taking it away from you in any case. All right, the Torah says tashbisa, and you've got to do what you can. Because it wants you to have a mental concept of the fact that you don't own any chometz. And the way of achieving that is for you to make a sincere mental declaration that it's all hefka. But the ikka din, says the Ran, is that it's not really in your rishus anymore. So we've got added precautions because chometz is an isur kares. So you make kol chamira, so you sell it, and so on. But there's another interesting chiddush. The Mekar Chaim, who is the Nesivus, he argues with the Bechor Sher. He says, it's not that when you sell the chometz, there's a giloy das that it's really yours, and therefore it annuls your annulment. It doesn't work like that. He says the reason why people sell chometz, shutz chendas shlomo siman beis, he says the reason why people are selling chometz is because they want to go out of their way to make sure that they don't own chometz on Pesach. Melamdim zechus al kal Yisrael. It's not that you really want to keep all your whiskey. It's because you don't want to be over earnest of deraisa, as you yourself say. And therefore, we have to praise those people who sell their chometz because they're creating an added precaution to make sure that they don't have any chometz in their possession. And that is the giloy das. The giloy das of the sale is simply to say, I don't want to own any chometz. And according to Marchaim, he goes a step further. He says there are cases where harama is allowed on a daraisa, that a legal fiction isn't just under Rabbanon. And he says that even if it's to be doing away with the daraisa, it's still okay to do it. Because when you're selling chometz, that is the bittul. That is your declaration that I don't own any chometz. And he says that is satisfying a din daraisa. And so the Chasam Sofer and Kufi Gimel actually says that nobody should cast any doubt on the fact that the chometz that you are selling is not properly sold. He says it's perfectly okay. And Rashi says in the Sefer Masa HaGeonim in his Teshuva, if you haven't, kol mashi yitzar goy osam mimenu, the goy can do with it whatever he wants, and that in itself is enough. That is not haram if the goy can do whatever he wants. And when the rabbi sells to the goy, he says to him, look, you can do with it whatever you want. So the Truma Sandeshin asks the question in Simon Kufkaf, what if you know for 100% sure the goy will not touch it? I know of a case once on a kibbutz in Israel where the goy turned up in the middle of Pesach and he asked to be brought to his whiskey and he helped himself and they couldn't do anything to stop him. And some of our non-Jewish friends, they like whiskey. When I made a bar mitzvah once and I had six large bottles ready before a kiddush and a reception, and so I thought, well, we only need to put out two bottles on the table for now because I asked the waiters to look after the other four bottles. So at the end of the Kiddush, of those two bottles, which the Jewish people having half of one bottle went, when I came to collect the other four bottles, they were all gone. So, okay, they're allowed to help themselves to it, and it's made clear that they can do it. So the Chasam Sofer says in Siman Kuf Yud Gimel, even though both parties know that it will be brought back before Pesach, and even if one say, listen, I'll buy it back from you after Pesach, provided that there are no conditions, it's okay. And what's the underlying thing from this, says the Shuvi Ve'esh? He says, however much you can laugh at the idea of selling so much quantities to somebody who hasn't got the money, well, you can still enforce it in a court of law. In an English court of law, you can still take that contract and enforce it. And if he can't pay up, you can declare him bankrupt and so on and so forth, but there is a kinyan. Besides, he might buy the lottery. I noticed that in some property deals, there are people who act as a go-between, and they can't afford to buy the property, but they negotiate a purchase from one party, and negotiate a sale from another party, and they just do a transfer and over, but they own the property, and they haven't even paid for it. So it's the same idea. They do legally own it. So there's no problem. And there's an interesting tshuva written by Rav Gestetner, who says that not only is it allowed to sell chometz for Pesach, he says that one should sell chometz on Pesach, because it's an added precaution, and it shows that you really do not intend to have any chometz in your possession, and therefore it's a good idea, even if you've got no chometz to sell, to say to a guy, I'm selling all my chometz, if I have any, in my possession. So this is the interesting background to the whole idea of selling chometz. Now some rabbonim who are particular, although it's not the general minhag, to have what's called an orev kablon. An orev kablon means that somebody is backing the goy to pay for it if the goy is not able to pay for it himself. And he signs some shtar to say that if the goy can't pay, then I will pay to make sure that the sale can properly go ahead. In practice, after Pesach, if a Jew is backing this sale, what hana is the Jew getting from the chometz? Are you suggesting that Lamafreya retrospectively he owned it? He's not owning it. He's giving him a guarantee that he will give him money. So I don't see why not. Okay, that's Mechiras Chometz. There's an interesting idea which comes out from something in Parshas Kisiso. In Parshas Kisiso, Perek Lamed Daled, Posuk Yudzayin, immediately before it talks about Chag HaMatzos, it says, Elohei Maseicho Lo Sas Eloch. Idols, you mustn't indulge in idol worship. And immediately following Posuk, it says Chag HaMatzos. So my father, Zichron and Rocha, said, why is there a connection here between idolatry and Chag HaMatzos? And he said that Chazal had this thing about people who get very angry. People get very angry, it's as if you are Ovid Avodah Zarah, said Chazal. If you are Ovid Avodah Zarah, it's the most terrible thing. So one should never get angry. And when it comes to Pesach, people are rushing around doing this, doing that, especially when it comes to baking matzahs. You've got to make sure you're within the 18 minutes, and there's rushing around. And anybody who's been inside a matzah bakery will see what an atmosphere and panic there is to be able to get out of the way, do this, do that, do this, do that. And people can really get carried away with their emotions. In fact, there was a question asked, why don't we have sukkahs at Pesach time? Because that's the time, you know, coming out of Egypt and so on. Can you imagine having to build a sukkah as well on Erev Pesach? Yeah. All right. So the goyim are going back in the house at the end of the summer. We're coming out. That's the answer. But there's so much going on Erev Pesach. It's the busiest day of the year. So it once happened. The story once occurred with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was not feeling well, so he couldn't take part in the baking of matzahs. And his talmidim asked him, Rebbe, what chumras shall we be particularly careful about when we bake our matzahs? The time it takes, or the size of flour, and what we're doing here in the bakery and there, and so on. He said, the most important thing you have to be careful about when you bake the matzahs is I want you to know that the woman who is bringing you the water from the well and is coming up the hill with it, be nice to her. She's a widow. Don't get aggressive with her. Because when you're baking those matzahs, you're going to get so impatient and so angry. Be careful. That's the most important thing you have to remember when you are baking your matzahs. And so, without quoting any sources, maybe it's a good idea that when one starts one's Seder night, one first starts with an announcement and proposes a vote of thanks to one's wife for all the work she's done in preparing for Pesach. And after all, maybe she should give you a vote of thanks, because she should be glad that you're only selling the chometz and you're not selling her jewellery. But that is something which is perhaps very important to remember when we enter the Pesach, and everybody should have not just a kosher Pesach, but also a freilichen Pesach, a chag kosher v'sameach. Thank you.